Welcome to the Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon, alongside St Ives Chambers, RHE Global and Barden Co-Recruitment in partnership with District 4. This podcast will explore how we can transform our communities in the 21st century.
Today, the Community Safety Podcast turns its attention yet again to domestic abuse. It's so important that we keep raising awareness about this really serious subject and get different guests' perspective and their own experiences of domestic abuse. Today's guest escaped an abusive and coercive relationship after a number of years. She fled with her daughter and is now making an incredible life for herself as a property developer, a poet and an author. Please take a listen to a snippet of today's interview.
His behaviour was becoming very alarming. The flat was very small, which, you know, I was sat here at times trying to think about my escape route, Jim. I was like, okay, I live on the first floor. I can jump out the window if I have to, but what does that mean about my beautiful girl? So there was just, this wasn't right. You know, this wasn't the right way to be thinking. And then it kind of kicked off and I thought, you know what, this is it. I am not having this. This is not going to be happening.
It's now time. This is the Community Safety Podcast. Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon.
Welcome to the Community Safety Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Nixon, and I've been working in community safety for over 25 years. This podcast will explore how we can transform communities in the 21st century. Please like, rate, and subscribe to the Community Safety Podcast. We really want to get our mission across to as many people as possible. So please tell a friend or two to listen in. I'm delighted to introduce today's guest as G. Danoa. G. embarked on becoming a full-time entrepreneur in 2020 when she began to realise her full potential within. She's a published Amazon author for her book Forgiven, Forgotten, So, a poetry book raising awareness of domestic and mental abuse. G is one of Anchor Women's Aid ambassadors, which supports women to rebuild their lives after abuse. This gives G the opportunity to use her first-hand experience in a positive way to help inspire others to overcome from being in a volatile relationship. Welcome, G. Thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on the Community Safety Podcast.
Jim, it's an absolute pleasure to be here with you this evening.
I know we've had a few problems getting you on, so it's been going on for a while. Internet issues, COVID issues, you name it. But you know what? You've been so lovely with it. Oh. You could have told me where to go, but you didn't, so thank you.
Oh, you're most welcome. No, Jim, you're an absolute sweetie, and of course I want to support the Community Podcast. So, and let's just say the theme for today is storms. So we've even got through a few storms together as well, haven't we?
Yeah, I had to cancel the one day because of storms as well. So yeah, it's been a nightmare. But you know what? We've got you on here and we're going to make the most of you while we've got you.
Oh,
and that's
thank you.
That's the main thing. So, welcome. And you're going to be part of the first three episodes. So you're going to be one of our first sort of episodes that we launch for the season two. So I always start each podcast sort of, I want to get to know you and to know about you in your early years. So tell me about G. Tell me about G growing up.
Right. So I can say, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but G as a youngster, she was very cheeky, always up to mischief. And I think that's where my inquisitive side kind of grew and it stuck with me. So, and I was actually thinking about something the other day that I actually recall the entrepreneurial side of me when I was in primary school. So me and my friends, we used to make this jewellery out of metal scraps and then try and sell it for 20p at lunch break. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, I used to get up to things when I was much younger as well. So it's very interesting when you start reflecting on your past life, like when you're much younger, and saying, oh, maybe that there was always that spark inside of me, which has only just now come to the surface. I used to get into trouble. I was in, so this is a funny story. I was naughty in primary school. So I said to the head teacher, so obviously she was thinking, what should G's punishment be today? And I said to her, why don't I strike a deal with you? You've just had a delivery of all these library books. Why don't I stamp them for you as my punishment? She said, what a great idea. So I got to choose my my own punishment, and then I think so fast forwarding into high school, I thought me and some other fellow people, we couldn't go to this school trip. So we were about 16. So we all decided to independently jump on public transport and go to this it was like in the Kensington Olympia. And again, I found myself in front of the head teacher's office at 15, 16, because we had done something really naughty that we had decided to use our initiative because there was limited spaces on the coach. And we got in trouble for that.
That's amazing. Shall I tell you my one before you carry on?
Absolutely.
My one is, my claim to fame was, this is really embarrassing actually. When I was at high school or secondary school, I was a prefect. And it was going through the time in the mid 80s, there was a lot of strikes, teacher strikes. So we actually used to go home at about 12 o'clock for like months.
Wow.
And it was just unbelievable. But, you know, it wasn't good and it was good. It was good and it was bad because you did miss out on your learning. And we were going through I was one of the dumb kids. So I was only doing sort of what they called CSEs, not O levels back then. But I don't know what happened one day, but we all got a little bit fed up. So I led a revolt and we all walked out of school, and there's about 300 of us walked out.
Oh my God.
And safe to say that I was in a lot of trouble and I lost my prefect badge as well.
Oh no.
So yeah, I was a naughty kid as well, so don't worry about it. And yeah. I do like what you said about that entrepreneurial. I was very much the same. I used to wash cars on a Sunday morning. Oh, I used to go around, knock people's doors, give them the hose pipe, they'd plug it in and I'd wash their cars, and it'd make me my money for the week. So yeah, I suppose there was a little bit of that in me as well.
Yeah.
So there you go. So go on then. So you're in high school and you're still causing problems.
Yeah. I mean, so talking about prefects, I was a head prefect, and I even remember once somebody saying to me, you do wear your own uniform, don't you? And I was like, listen, this is not the matter here. I'm a good person. Like, you know, I think I would say as I got older, I knew to kind of tone down my cheekiness. So, you know, from primary school, yeah, hell, cheeky, in trouble with my parents. Not in a bad way, as in I was causing so much uproar, but I was testing the boundaries. I think definitely like to test the boundaries. And then in high school, I think I learned to use it in a more creative way, you know, finding ways to like the kind of, you know, writing poetry at the back of my maths books, not really enjoying maths as much. And then just finding other ways to keep myself occupied. But yeah, I still did well, in high school. But I think you have to have character and personality. And that's something I most definitely encourage in my daughter. So my daughter has personality and a sense of humour. And I sometimes think to myself, gosh, you're much better behaved than I was at that age. And I don't tell her that because I don't want her to know that, you know, oh, I can push the boundaries further with my mum. But
don't let her listen to this.
Yeah.
Don't let her listen to this episode.
Later, when she's a bit older.
Do you know, I think that's really good what you said there about personality in kids and that. I think it's so important these days. I don't know what it is, but I don't know whether it's the way kids are brought up these days, but I don't know, sometimes it's as though they don't have their own personalities.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really important that they do and that they strike out on their own. And I know probably, you know, when I grew up in the sort of 70s, 80s, we had a lot more freedom. So I was able to kind of probably express myself more so than kids of today. But I really do think sometimes that parents have got to let go a little bit and let their kids kind of, like, you know, develop.
Totally with you, Jim. I think you've got to let your child make the mistakes. You've got to share that your child actually has a choice. And it's something I actually spoke with my daughter about this morning. It was like, what would you like to do? Because I want to hear her. I want to know that she can express her opinions now and I can guide her to the right decision. But I firstly would like to know what decision she would have made. So, you know, sometimes when I do speak to my mum, I'm like, you know, I know Iva's got this, mum. You know, she knows what she wants, and she is very clear in, you know, what she wants from life. She's only 7, but she most definitely knows her vision. She's got the name of her restaurant. She knows what menu she's going to set up. She is totally, like, clear. But equally, you know, I think it's very important not to mollycoddle our children. Yes, you know, especially living in London, it is a tough environment at times, but you know, I was talking to a fellow friend just the other day, and I said, you know, couldn't you believe what talent and what resilience they will have from being a child brought up in a city? You know, what great skill set they have, because then they can learn to turn it off and on when they require that skill set. And it's an absolute privilege growing up in a city, because the opportunities, that's where most people come for opportunities.
Yeah, I grew up in the second city, not as busy as London, but yeah, I'm glad that, you know, my kids have grown up in a big city like Birmingham as well, you know, because there's a lot of opportunities. And, you know, I've seen people that have grown up in more rural locations, and I'm not knocking this at all, but, you know, they probably haven't had the same opportunities and probably have to then eventually go out into the larger cities when they're older for work and stuff. And I think it becomes quite a rude awakening for them in some ways, where when you live in a big city like we do, it's not such an issue. So from sort of high school then, did you go on to university?
So this would be an interesting one for you, Jim. I wanted to be a music producer. So, you know, to go along with the songwriting and the poetry, I thought, okay, so I signed up to a music technology degree, had fantastic music producers teaching me, but I just couldn't keep up with, you know, for many reasons, I couldn't keep up with the skill set. I had a part-time job in M&S, which was becoming a bit more full-time to make things work, because being in studios and studio equipment back then wasn't cheap. You know, you need a Mac, you then
crazy prices,
yeah, then you need studio hire time, you needed a lot of kit, and if you weren't continuously practicing, then it wasn't really worth it. And I recall retaking a year, and that was a real downer for me as well, but I continued up until second year, but sadly I didn't finish that degree. So then I actually took a long break. So then I just went straight into work, just was in the retail industry for many, many years. I can't recall the top of my head. And I've actually graduated in 2020 in a construction management degree. So I actually decided to do part-time in construction management whilst working as a project manager. So I did it much later in my life, and I'm very much for you don't have to stick to a pattern in life, that you can break it for the right reasons.
My daughter's just done the same, actually. She started work, she's still doing bits and pieces part-time, but yeah, she's gone back to university, and she's 26, and she's doing the college, she's doing a university degree now in psychology.
Amazing.
In counselling. So, you know, I mean, I did something similar. You know, I got married quite young, and I went back to college after we had our first child, and did a couple of years, and then joined the police after that.
Right.
You know, there's no hard and fast rule at the end of the day. It's like you say, it's about making those right choices. And for me, and clearly for you, you've made some amazing choices, and they've worked out.
Exactly. And I think it's important to share that. So I share that with my daughter now. I say to her, if you want to go traveling, if you want to do something else in life, if something takes you a different path, you know, I'll support you with it. She's only 7, but she's like a mini adult. So you can most definitely have conversations with her.
Do you know what? I was just talking to you before we switched on the mic, you know, about my granddaughter. She's 3. But boy, I'd tell you what, she amazes me every day. And I'm not just saying that because I'm her granddad, but some of the things she comes out with, and long may it continue, because I just love, like you say, that she's got that own personality. Yeah. And she knows what she wants already at 3, so your daughter must be like about to run the world.
She's actually going to host, she said to me, Mummy, I'm going to host a free event. So my sister and I do these workshops, which we call Blossom Workshops, and it's about they're free workshops. And Iva's idea is, Mummy, can I do a kiddie one for Easter holidays? I was like, absolutely. So we've made notes of how she wants to host it, what she wants to do with the kids, and I thought, fantastic, go for it.
It's brilliant. Yeah, really good to see. And as I say, you know, just let her blossom as per what it's all about. Let her carry on and do what she's got to do.
Yeah.
Obviously, we sort of talked a little bit about you and the sort of different way that you've approached university and that, but I wanted to bring you back to sort of your relationship and the sort of the turbulent relationship that you obviously got in, you know, into, and I just wondered if you could sort of, you know, tell me about that and how that all evolved, really.
Mm-hmm. So I think firstly I'd like to say, like, I was 19 when I first met my long-term partner, and I have to, you know, when I look back, I'm like, I don't actually think I know what love was. I don't think I actually know what a healthy relationship is or was. So that would first, straight away, I'm like, I wish we taught that more to children. You know, I wish we taught them what actually a healthy, productive, supportive relationships looks like. So I was 19, naive now, thinking I was much maturer at that time. So I met my long-term partner. We had a good relationship at the initial stages. So, you know, we got on. I adored him, he adored me, and we got on really well. But then 5 years into the latter part of the relationship, so the last 5 years of the relationship, things really changed. And, you know, I've always been a loyal person, but again, this is where I'm saying healthy boundaries. I wasn't aware of these healthy boundaries to ensure my mental well-being was taken care of. I totally ignored it. I was only interested in why my partner was experiencing what he was experiencing. So he was having mental health issues. He was talking about suicide. He was talking about things which sadly then started reflecting onto me. So the first time he raised his hand on me, I was in utter shock. Like, you know, you're thinking, this didn't just happen. You know, I didn't just fly across the world to set up a new life with him. And 4 days into this, that I've just been, you know, striked with a ninja strike. And I thought, no. And then, you know, I think from that first incident, I think he himself was shocked that he did it. But I must go back a little bit, actually. The whole reason why I uprooted and to go and live, so it was a long distance relationship initially, so it was lots of back and forth. I went to live with him because I realized his mental health, something was surfacing. So, you know, it was diagnosed as bipolar, very objective, you know, with people of culture, that mental health is not a topic that they'd want to talk about.
Yeah.
So it was very, very much a taboo subject, and so touchy with the family. So there was no family support for me to have a break or for me to get any support. But so I uprooted myself as a good partner and went to live. But I hadn't realized what a dangerous move that was. So
where did you go?
So I went to the Caribbean. I went to Jamaica. Yeah.
So you were out there, no family, no support, completely isolated.
Totally. And then I think, and this is going to sound weird what I'm going to say, because there was so much control even from 5,000 miles away. So when I was cracking on with my life here, and of course we were in a serious relationship, there was still that level of control through the phone, through technology. But then that control became so much more explosive, like you said, with the isolation. You know, I probably only had two friends out there. So two friends that I had seriously could trust, who had made that relationship with them in the years that me and my ex had been together. And even at those points, I became unsociable because I didn't want to socialize. And I have to confess, I actually never told them until much later, when incidents of violence became much more serious, that one of my friends had to call the police. And, you know, in Jamaica, they don't mess around. They come armed. You know, you've got guns and everything out of protection. So they had to get me safe passage through a previous property that we lived in. And at that point, I think people started realizing what really was happening. And, you know, sadly, it's sad because in the community that he lived, he was just known as the madman. And I, coming from a Western culture, knew that he was not mad. He needed support. He needed help. But it was all being rejected by him. So it came to a point where, I guess the biggest, one of the biggest points was when you're faced of a near-death experience and you're just staring and begging for your life and you're like, gee, this is really serious. You know, you need to get out of this. So that was pretty, that, if I'm honest with you, Jim, that was the last time I ever went there. So I never, you know, why would I? But, you know, I'm being totally honest with you today because one thing I totally respect, people, both men and women, on a receiving end of domestic and mental abuse, we go through it several times until we actually wake up, until we actually realise how serious what we're in. And it takes a lot of guts and it takes a lot of courage and bravery to really start taking those first steps. When I mean first steps, I mean serious first steps, because I took those baby steps, which I then retracted. And then, you know, those beautiful friends that were around saying, oh my gosh, G's playing with fire right now. You know, she's gone back to him. She's, you know, made the most silliest decision because we know how serious it was. We came to rescue her. We came to take her away from him. And it really is playing with your own life. But, you know, my wake-up call was actually when I had my beautiful daughter. So I had my beautiful daughter and I had to make a decision. Is it him or her? And of course I was going to choose her. And that was it. That was, and but what, one thing I want to share, Jim, it doesn't have to take a child to make you make such a serious decision. It should actually take self-respect, self-esteem, self-love, you know, knowing how much you mean to everybody else around you. Forget the partner that's being abusive. Realize that you mean so much to yourself and how much potential you have with yourself to then really realize you deserve more.
Yeah. You know, you touch on a really good point there, because it seems to me that when you were back in the UK before, you know, obviously you started the relationship, you were very much in control, you know, and you sort of had a path. And then all of a sudden, you feel like you're 19 years of age, you fall in love, or you believe that you fall in love. And slowly, that personality has been eroded out. It's been eroded, hasn't it? Completely.
Totally, Jim.
Where you were a person then that you don't really know yourself.
Absolutely. By the time I decided or started to realise things were wrong, it was unrecognisable G. You know, this, and going back to that cheeky, mischievous, happy, always smiling G was non-existent in Jamaica for many, many years. You know, people probably didn't even know who I was. They're probably, and this is where, again, I want to say, it wasn't people to get to know me. It was for me to stay true to myself. It was important for me to share with the world who G is. So I actually lost her because I started to settle and started to accept my circumstances. And you shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't have to sacrifice who you are for a partner. You know, not just one that's domestically or abusive mentally, but in any circumstances. You know, you shouldn't have to ever compromise who you are. And you know, that's one learning, and probably why I've been single for like forever and ever, because I absolutely know my worth now. I absolutely know that I'm looking for a supportive, loving partner who would turn around and say to me, gee, how can I help you? You know, you might have the most craziest ambition, but how can I help you to reach there? Or, you know, or give me an opinion. You know, so open to working as a team. And that, and these are things that I've learned later what healthy, you know, relationships look like.
Yeah, because just because you're in a relationship, it does, whether you're in a relationship long term or whatever, or married, it doesn't mean that you have to lose your identity, does
totally.
It? You know, you were a person long before you got into that relationship. And just because you are in that relationship, it really means you can continue to be that person. And if you're with the right person, then they will allow you to continue to grow.
Absolutely.
And like you've just said, support you.
Yeah, totally. And I think you know, going back to it, Jim, that I feel, and this is something that I am working towards actually for this year, just I want to teach young children in schools, you know, workshops that this is what healthy relationships look like. This is what decisions you can make in a situation, whether they're experiencing toxic relationships through their parents. I want children to realize they don't have to repeat that pattern. You know, I think we need to start changing the beautiful souls who have no choices at this point in time because they're underage to make decisions. They can't leave family homes where, you know, where they're experiencing toxic environment, really. But one thing I want to do is empower them to realize that, you know, just because mummy or daddy does things a certain way doesn't mean you have to then carry on doing it that way. And I see it all the time, Jim. I see kids whose parents might not speak in a very favorable way, or they might be quite rude, and sadly it then is what the child reflects back. The child starts behaving in the same manner.
It's learned behavior.
Yeah, exactly.
It's learned behavior, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, totally.
And it is really difficult, but I do totally agree with you. I'm a massive advocate of kind of getting into kids young.
Yes.
But I think what makes it very complex is that you do the work with them away from the family home, say if the problem is there, and then they go back.
Yeah.
And then those influences are back again. So it's that, it's kind of how you break that cycle. And some of these families, you know, it's generational, isn't it?
It's
kind of just gone on from family, you know, from generation to generation. So it is very difficult, but it can be done and it can be achieved. And my view is, you know, as I'm sure yours is, you know, you work on a success rate of one, and you could be saving a life.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I think, you know, exactly, you mentioned something really important. It's about how can you give consistency to them regardless of them going back to that toxic home? So how can you, so, you know, I'm talking about a workshop, but it's like, how can you then positively ensure they're encouraging themselves? You know, they're almost building themselves up every day to be that positive person and that they deserve to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was, coming back to Jamaica, what was a typical day like for you, you know, when things were really, really bad?
Yeah.
What was a typical day like for you?
So things were tough out there. So I got employment. So I was an area manager of a couple of stores, like equivalent Foot Locker, but a local kind of sports brand out there, company. So I would go to work. I would leave the gate. I would jump on the bus because, you know, things weren't good out there. So I would jump on a bus and I would get to the city. I would work my working day. I would have a couple of texts and missed calls accused of having an affair and so forth. And this was me trying to make ends meet. And I was getting accused. You know, there was lots of accusations. I would have a great time with my team. You know, a fabulous time with my co-workers. We would all collectively walk together back to the bus stop. And I have to say, they respected me so much because there was this expectation that G's from London and she's going to have her car, she's going to have her riches, and she's going to be absolutely fine. I am far from that. You know, if me making things work meant I use public transport, because he wasn't working. You know, he was a self-proclaimed singer stroke artist, and let's just say things never hit the ground. And this was a constant theme where, you know, and this again proves more the kind of the sacrifice. I recall, you know, writing a CV for him, making, you know, this is the wrong language, I'm listening, making him go to look for jobs. And I was there outside with him. Go and start asking if people want some work. Nope, 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 nope. You know, not doing it. So there was no teamwork. There was no partnership. So then I would come back home. One thing that was, which I would give him credit for, he was a very good cook. And on most occasion, there was food there back waiting for me. But I tell you something funny, Jim. There was a time when I recall, and, you know, I was absolutely gutted. I used to go to the market on Sundays and get the groceries. And then I remember he had some family with him, and I went and got the groceries. They cook the food, ate it all, and not left me any. I was like, I was like, goodness me, do I mean that little? I'm the one bringing the food here and you've all eaten it and not left me any. And yeah, it was, you know, I can now say so much on reflection, but when you're experiencing it, you almost say to yourself, gee, why didn't you stand up for yourself? Gee, why didn't you not go to the market every Sunday like, you know, like a silly person and come back and be the provider? So I think one thing I've realized in any long-term relationship I've been in, I've always pretty much been the provider. So I had to kind of look back into that and say, you know what, I don't want to be the only provider in a relationship because this just isn't right.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it can work, but it's under the right circumstances, and it's around, you know, that other person then putting as much back into the relationship, you know. Like, I suppose, like, when I was growing up in the 70s, you know, mum didn't work, but dad did, right. But mum would still, you know, work her socks off to make sure the house was,
totally,
you know, spot on and all that kind of stuff. And she only started working sort of when I was sort of late in my teens. But that was a partnership, you know,
exactly.
And it worked well.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is, you know, you've kind of got some, apart from the cooking, some lazy bloke at home, really, who's not doing an awful lot, and you're out earning the crust, and
yeah,
then you're not even being fed yourself at times. That's just not right, is it?
No, it's not. No. And all I can say, right, Jim, to give comfort, that would never, ever happen again.
I'm sure it won't.
Yeah.
I'm sure it won't. Talking to you now, I'm sure it won't. But sometimes, you know, gee, you have to go through these experiences, I suppose, to come out the other side and be, maybe, you know, if things had sort of maybe be a bit more of a slow burner, maybe you may have stuck at it and you may have not come out the other side, but you're in such a better place today, aren't you?
Oh, goodness me. I am probably the most happiest I've been in a very long time. So if we look the like pre-19-year-old and to where I am now, I think I am absolutely loving life, loving giving back, love being an ambassador for Aunt Cheryl. It's like, you know, where can I help? Always promoting them on any platform that I have an opportunity, because they're absolutely doing a splendid job, you know, with supporting ladies in particular to take those,
they're amazing,
steps.
I do a lot of work with them, yeah. They're amazing.
Just a absolutely fabulous, fabulous charity. Yeah. And
so when you had that light bulb moment, obviously you made that choice between daughter and long-term partner.
Yep.
Did you come straight back to the UK?
So that actual decision-making happened in my flat in the UK.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so he came here, which, you know, it wasn't the easiest to get him here. He came here via visa and stuff. And I literally knew when I went to the airport, I made the wrong decision. So I knew I'd made the wrong decision. I could see that he didn't look like himself, if that can sound correct or not. I could see he didn't look right. He literally lasted 1 week in my flat, and then he was escorted off by the police, and that was it done. I knew I made the wrong decision. His behavior was becoming very alarming. The flat was very small, which, you know, I was sat here at times trying to think about my escape route, Jim. I was like, okay, I live on the first floor. I can jump out the window if I have to, but what does that mean about my beautiful girl? So there was just that this wasn't right, you know, this wasn't the right way to be thinking. And then it kind of kicked off, and I thought, you know what, this is it. I am not having this. This is not going to be happening. And maybe, and I've thought about this, I probably felt more territorial being in the UK, because this is home. This is more like, don't mess with me. And I think, so, you know, in life, we all get kind of, don't ever kind of go with what if. So this 1 week with me and him together was the what if he never came? What if things worked better? But when he laughed in my face and said, you think I'm coming here to seek medical help for my bipolar? And he just laughed in my face. And he said, and then he laughed in my face and said, do you actually think I'm going to work here? And I thought, right, I don't need to hear no more then, really, do I? Like, it's all pretty much quite clear. I thought he could help me, you know, like co-parent, raise our daughter together, because it was more about our daughter. And then when he said those things, I thought, well, no, thank you then.
We just want to take a quick break from the podcast to highlight a noise investigation tool that is distributed by our main sponsor, RHE Global. I've been using the Noise app for a number of years and found it to be a really effective tool to assist in the investigation of noise complaints. The app can be downloaded onto your smartphone or tablet and allows you to record 30-second bursts of noise. The recordings are then forwarded to your case manager for further investigation. The app recordings can be used in court to support your investigation and can also be really useful capturing safeguarding incidents. For further information, please contact the Noise app team via their website, www.thenoiseapp.com or sales@rheglobal.com. Yeah, what did you mean by alarming stuff as well? You were obviously looking at planning your routes. How would you describe in a bit more detail what alarming meant to you? What was going on?
Yeah, so definitely knew when he was working himself up. So he was staring at the mirror, huffing and puffing, and you could see he was winding himself up in a rage of anger. So I knew that meant somebody's going to get hurt. You know, he's just totally winding himself up. Something's going on in his head. I think this actually came up in conversation with my sister last night, and I said to her, I said, so that incident happened during the day, and then his cousin and his partner came during a couple of hours after, and I told her, you know, probably a cry of help, I told her that he sometimes hits me, and she, bless her, probably didn't know how to take it because she was quite new to the family, and she must have told the cousin who they had a relationship with, and let's just say no one believed me at that point in time. They were like, no way, like they've never seen that side of him, so they were like, no, there's no way. But you know, that family, they came back to me and apologized. Not particularly that cousin, but the family within that who didn't believe me, they apologized because they experienced it firsthand. Exactly what, you know, it comes to a point where someone needs help and they're denying help, and it kind of comes back down to that. And then I had to make a decision of, you know, am I going to try and be the fixer all the time? Am I going to try and put my life at risk? Am I going to be say it's okay for my daughter to witness such behavior? And the answers were no. I was not okay with my daughter to have a parent that was aggressive, a parent that was violent, a parent that wasn't very respectful. And I have to say, I've absolutely loved raising her by myself. It's been an absolute pleasure because I know how I got raised, and you know, it's about respect, manners, you speak correctly, you help other people in life, and I don't think that would have been happening with the ex in the relationship.
So in a lot of ways, it's given you that freedom to be able to bring up your daughter exactly how you want to do without those toxic kind of behaviours.
Totally.
You know, being witnessed all the time.
Yeah, and I know, and I've written a poem about this in my book as well, where, you know, people say I stuck with it for the sake of the children. You know, we hear it all the time, and it's a male or a female in a toxic relationship that's confused what to do, you know, and they start using the kids as the excuse to justify them staying. But you know, my plea would be, please think about a lovely, fresh environment where you can start thinking of the advantages of mummy and daddy being happy in their separate environments, and what that would do for your child's growth, what that would do for your child's relationship with you, as opposed to you, like how I was, walking on eggshells, and you have no connection with your child in those situations. You're totally, you know, if you're thinking of survival, if you're thinking about when's the next time they're going to lash out, or when's the next time they're going to speak to me in a manner that's embarrassing in front of my children, you're never going to be present there for your child. So I would seriously ask someone to just think about, what are the benefits of separation? You know, what are the benefits of separation? And whoever needs the help receives the help, and you take it from there, is what I would say. So one step at a time, but you have to remove yourself from that environment in order to think clearly.
I think that's absolutely fantastic what you just said there, and I think a lot of people will resonate with that. Mm. Really will resonate with that, and you know, sometimes, like you say, people stay because of the kids, but actually, it's probably a good thing for you and your daughter that actually, as we've said, that she's free of that now, and she's free of that day, the daily toxic kind of situation where you're not thinking about her as much because you're thinking about survival.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's as simple as that, isn't it, really?
It is.
I think the one thing I would say, though, is, and I think you totally agree with this, I'll be interested in your views, but we talk about this a lot when we do the networking with Anshore Women's Aid, is that the worst thing people can say to you is just leave. Mm-hmm. I think you've got to come up with that decision yourself.
Oh, totally. Totally. I think, you know, when I was saying the kind of false alarms of seeking help, and I've said this before, where I would just ask anyone who is being that support network for someone that knows that they're going through a domestic or mental abuse situation at home, just be patient with them. There will come that time where they absolutely get the full courage that's required, but just be patient, because that baby step of them even sharing or reaching out to you has been such a big milestone for them. Just be patient. They will get there. But like you said, it has to be their decision. When you force someone to come out of a situation, and the police and the police see this all the time. So, you know, when they've put a statement out there on behalf of someone they've seen physically abused, or, you know, and then it gets retracted and then there's no case and it falls through, I understand where the police might get disheartened, because they were looking out for somebody, you know, they were called to a domestic in a house, they can see that there's injuries there, but then someone retracts it back. And this, and I've mentioned before, I call this the yo-yo. So this is when someone's yo-yoing between, you know, being in a confused state of being on a receiving end of being in an unhealthy relationship. But as you know, a yo-yo does go up at some point and it will go back to its center. And that's exactly when the strength comes, when you go back into your center, when you realize your own strength, when you realize who you are. And that takes time, because as we were talking, Jim, I was destroyed from who I was at the beginning as a 19-year-old to who I ended up being towards the end. Two very different people.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you've come, as you said, you've come out of the other side, and you look at all the things that you're doing now and how your life is. You just said, you know, I'm the happiest I've ever been.
Yeah.
Then that says it all for me, really. Oh, you know, thanks. Whether you're single or whether, and it's like, I like the fact that you've chosen at the moment, because of everything you've learned, it would have been so easy. And you see this a lot, you know, that people come out of one toxic relationship, mm-hmm. and then go straight into another.
Yeah.
And I think it's so great to see that you're actually sort of taking a step back and going, well, actually, you know, I'm going to take my time and go into a relationship when I know it's the right relationship to be in. And until that point, I'm not going to enter into that kind of arrangement. So I'm back in, you know, effectively, I could be back to square one.
Yeah. And I think learning that you actually have a choice of what you're looking for from a partner was so refreshing when I realized this. So, you know, I know I was looking for someone ambitious. I know I was looking for someone caring. I know there were certain traits, personalities, and things I was looking for. And when you realize that you actually have a choice and you don't have to settle, that was the moment where I was like, keep going, G. You know, you don't have to settle. You don't have to make do because someone gives you interest. You know, this is not what we're looking for in life. We're looking for partnership, because people are bringing the right values, bringing the right kind of attitudes into a relationship. And that's more important. And that is most definitely worth waiting for. Because I know, you know, I've been through it myself, that when you do come out of a toxic relationship, you're feeling low. So as you said earlier, Jim, it's so easy to re-enter into a relationship for the sake of being or for the sake of belonging. But I'd like to challenge someone to really start connecting back with themselves and start really enjoying their own company, you know, exploring new areas, new adventures. And if you have children, just focus on connecting back with your children, because they would need you more, because it would be such a change for them as well if you started taking those steps of, you know, building a new life.
Oh, that's brilliant. I really love that. And as I say, I think a lot of people will resonate with it when they listen to this podcast. You mentioned earlier about your poetry, which I thought was it's really, really interesting. And obviously you've got your book. Tell us about the book and what sort of inspired it.
So the book actually happened 5 years after leaving my toxic relationship. So it was very much always on the back of my mind. But one thing I'm a big believer in, nothing happens before its time. So its time wasn't during those 5 years. That time was me being selfish, me building myself back up. And then came a point in time where I was ready to start sharing, to raise awareness of mental and physical abuse. There are takes of my experiences in there. There are takes of people that I've heard their stories, so other survivors. And I also wanted it to be inclusive. So I've got, it doesn't have to be a heterosexual relationship. I've deliberately done it also to represent the lesbian and gay community, because I also know domestic and mental abuse is quite paramount there as well. So there are poems in there that represent, things like, we fought for this right, to be in a relationship, and like, this is how you treat me. You know, this is so important for me to kind of share that. So in my poetry book, I want to call it creative poetry. So I've done what I want to do. So it's my expression, it's my creativity in there. So the words are displayed deliberately in certain ways. So when I say there's one called yo-yo, they are literally, the words are yo-yoing on the page, because that's how I wanted to demonstrate the confused state of mind somebody would have. So I've really played with the words. I even drew the illustrations myself, not saying they're perfect, but so one thing I'm a believer in, when you're being creative, when you're creating a piece of art, it's so personal to you that there's no wrong or right to it. And that's exactly how I kind of treat my poetry. I didn't follow any rules. I was there to break the rules, because 5 years of being silenced of what I was going through was now my time to vocalize. So I vocalized in a book, and I've had such great feedback from people who needed to read the book. So people who have read the book have just said that my poetry gives them strength, that they go to it whenever they need. And it absolutely, as we were saying, if I just change that one life, if I help that one person to take that first step of coming out of a toxic domestic relationship, that means the world to me. But I'm going to go back on that, Jim, because I'm ambitious and I want to speak louder and I want to help more people. And this is where I'm so grateful for Anshel Women's Aid Charity for giving me the opportunity to be a representative of the charity. And, I feel honoured when I do get opportunities like with yourself today to kind of discuss this topic, a topic that gets brought up. So this is an interesting thing that I found during the pandemic. We heard, oh my gosh, domestic, abuse, the stats have gone so high. But I'm the kind of person like, but what's the solution? What are we going to do about it? And then all of a sudden, next couple of days, it doesn't make the news anymore. It's no longer the topic of the day. And that's what annoys me. So going back to being consistent with the message, we need to raise awareness. We need to find a long-term solution in the making. So I'm not saying that, that we're going to find the solution, that we're going to change legislation in our lifetime, but we can most definitely be there to raise more awareness and start changing the way for it.
I moderated on one of the Anshel Women's Aid Microcosmic events the other week.
Oh yeah.
It was unreal. It was 2 hours. We could have been speaking for like a day. And then we followed it up with a round table that I did with a colleague of mine, Matt Baird, and there was representatives from Anshel's on there as well. Natalie Rose was on there, who you probably know. And it's just incredible. But I think it's really important that we keep raising this awareness. But one view I have got, and I raised this at the round table a couple of weeks ago, that I think there's certain things in society that we see today that maybe when I was a kid, and I'll give you a couple of great examples. When I was growing up, there was a campaign around seatbelts and about wearing seatbelts in cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now there's a very much a stigma now around, you know, if you don't put your seatbelt on in a car, people will go, well, why haven't you got your seatbelt on? Put your seatbelt on.
Yeah.
And there's like a stigma attached to it. And it's the same with drink driving. When I was growing up as a kid, you know, it was kind of acceptable. But as I've grown up, you know, as sort of more and more awareness has been raised around drink driving, people that drink drive now, I think, are sort of looked upon as, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah,
you could
totally.
Have potentially killed someone,
yeah.
Or they do kill people.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think is that there has to be more of a stigma attached to mental abuse, domestic and mental abuse,
yep.
And all these kind of, you know, terrible things that happen to both men and women.
Yeah.
I think if society starts to have a little bit more of a, well, we don't think that's acceptable, and, you know, there is that more stigma, then I think it would help reduce some of the incidents, because people would think twice.
Totally.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I am absolutely with you. So we're almost saying, let's start sharing the consequence of actions, because that's what the perpetrator gets away with, are the consequences because of someone retracting their statement, because of the manipulation that's involved in that type of relationship, that they then kind of withdraw their statement. So, you know, I think you're absolutely right in the terms, we need to deal with it as communities. We need to know that our neighbor has our back. We need to know that if there's a domestic going, that your neighbor doesn't have consequences to be told to keep your nose out of it. Because that's where people have started to really, you know, you don't know what goes on in anyone's home anymore, but yet you can hear the cries, you can hear the shouting, you can hear everything that you know in your home is not acceptable. But if we as a community could feel empowered to take action, and, you know, and maybe even if there was a community type reporting system, and that starts counting to the perpetrator being prosecuted, because there's those kind of, you know, witness testaments or statements put against that person, it starts building a case against them, as opposed to the person, you know, on the receiving end, who might be so overwhelmed and they're not quite ready to take that action. I think we have to start looking at the bigger picture of how we can help, as opposed to, you know, just thinking that only the victim has to take action. Because I think we're at a point where, and can, especially during the pandemic, so only neighbours would have been listening to something quite regularly. So they actually have a great position to support. And I think that's where awareness comes first. And awareness and wanting to help comes through being emotionally connected with what the victims on the receiving end going through. And I think that's the main reason why I wrote my poetry book the way I did. I wanted people who have and not have received to understand what it feels like through the eyes of someone who's a survivor, and for someone who has experienced domestic and mental abuse. Because I think, Jim, to be honest, my mum and my sister cried, because I think they hadn't realised what I had been through. So, you know, it's one thing telling them that I've kept this silent from you guys for 5 years, and then it was a different thing. And I think my brother found it very difficult to read the book, if I'm honest with you. I think he just didn't know how to handle something of that level, to say, I can't believe this.
I think it'd be poignant at this point, if you don't mind me asking, is whether or not you would sort of just give us a very small sort of extract from that book. Is there one sort of part of it that you could just share with us?
Yeah, so I've actually got it here. So when I write, I just open the page, and the one that I have is called Shattered. Exhausted and consumed by your inconsistency, confused and misled, exposed and vulnerable to another episode, another time, secret cry, a panic, a shock, just shattered.
That is so powerful.
Oh, thank you.
And it's that kind of stuff that people will really resonate with. So I think it's something that people have, you know, should go out and have a look at and buy, because, you know, particularly if you're affected by domestic abuse, whether it be directly or indirectly, I think they kind of publications from good people like yourself that have been there will, you know, it just shares those experiences and hopefully gives people hope when they see your journey that they can come out the other side.
Oh, totally. And I would say even if someone knows someone experiencing a toxic relationship, gift it to them, buy it as a gift, or, you know, I think it's available on Kindle as well. So it doesn't have to be that you're personally experiencing it. It could just be that little nudge of you showing your friend that you're there for him or her, and that they just read something, and one of them might just connect with them to take that next step, as we're saying, that is life-saving. Because I think this is what, you know, going back on the topic of domestic violence, it kills. You know, how more serious do we need for it to get that people lose their lives? And I most definitely nearly lost my life through it. So we really need, and going back to the campaigns as you used as the seatbelt is because it kills, the alcohol, the drink driving, because it kills. So I am totally with you, Jim, that there needs to be a campaign in regards to just the seriousness of what this really means, and it needs to be in people's faces. It needs to be there. And this is another thing that, you know, the campaigns during the pandemic, I mean, I don't know if you felt there were so many campaigns on there, but I don't think there was enough campaigns on mental or domestic abuse and the support that could have been.
No, I don't think there was.
There wasn't enough. There were cat charities, there were dog charities, there were third world countries, but I'm quite a believer in let's start supporting at home as well. So when we talk about there are beautiful children in this country that are in poverty, you know, there are families here that are struggling, let's start helping our own here as well. Let's not keep trying to help. I'm not saying we shouldn't help others, but I'm saying, you know, as my mum always says, charity starts at home. So our, you know, in the UK, let's start helping the kids that need uniform.
You're preaching to the converted there, G. I totally get what you're saying. Yeah, we should help people, but we've got to get our own house in order first, surely.
Exactly.
And I think the other point I wanted to make as well is that it does kill, and we know that, and I'm so glad I'm talking to you here today and you've come through it.
Thank you.
But it's also the broken kids that this brings along in life as well. I've seen in my police career, and then now in my career as a local authority manager, I see an awful lot of kids affected by domestic abuse, you know, and a lot of broken kids that then go on to offend. I'm not saying all of them, but, you know, I do see a lot. And that sometimes always concerns me as well.
It absolutely breaks my heart. Like, you know, I see the kids running barefoot. And this is the UK I'm talking, kids running barefoot outside a house. And, you know, their parents are probably, you know, taking drugs at that point in time and in a very toxic, shouty kind of relationship. And it just breaks my heart, Jim, is all I can say. And one thing that me and my daughter talk about is most definitely going to be adopting. So I want to adopt. And my daughter said, Mum, it has to be a brother and sister. I was like, okay, we'll adopt a brother and sister. So when I'm in a position in the next couple of years, I want to be helping a child out of the system. So we'll be going to help somebody in the UK, a family, you know, that couldn't take care of their children. But I've got all the love in the world, and I would love, you know, I just want to love them and grow my family. And that's, and again, it's again thinking outside the box. So, you know, just the whole thing of not doing university at 18 or not finishing it, should I say, and then not doing things the way that you're kind of told. And when people say to me, oh, I can't have children, and I always say, have you thought about adoption? Like, there is such a different way to be a parent.
I'm actually adopted myself. I was adopted because my... Yeah, so it's a crazy story, which I'll tell you probably off air, but I'm adopted. So, and my parents couldn't have kids at that time. So, it's just one of those things. But, you know, I had a great life and probably had a much better life than the one I would have had.
Yeah.
So I'm a massive advocate of adoption, obviously, and fostering and all those kind of practices. So, you know, it's really, really important. We're coming to the end of this interview. Can you believe that we've been talking for about an hour non-stop? It goes so quick, doesn't it? It's mad. I don't know how people... How do these guys do podcasts for half an hour? I just don't know how. I could never do a half an hour podcast. It just wouldn't work.
No,
Jim likes talking.
I have to say, you have to have chemistry. You've got to have chemistry with the person you're doing a podcast with, because I think if you don't, then absolutely half an hour could be too long, Jim.
I hope that's a compliment.
Oh, most definitely.
But thank you. We're just coming to the end, and I just wondered, is there anything you wanted to cover before we wrap up? Anything I haven't asked you that you wanted me to ask you, that, you know, this is your great opportunity now to sort of say what you want to say before we end?
I just want to say that I would love to support wherever somebody feels that a fellow person experienced domestic violence could encourage others. So if there was somebody else that thought, oh, you know, speaking with G could really help a community of fellow survivors or experiencers, or I would love to know how I could help, is what I would like to say. So okay. You know, could I come in as a speaker? Could I come and read some poetry for you to spark up that kind of, you know, the kind of encouragement that they need? So that's what I would say.
I can certainly help you with that anyway, because there's amazing. A lot of networks that I work with that would definitely be able to, you could definitely tap into. So we'll definitely collaborate on that.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be ace. That'd be brilliant.
Thank you.
I work with a number of organisations that I know you would be welcomed with open arms. So we'll talk about that after the interview.
Thank you, Jim.
How can people reach out to you? I mean, you know, there might be someone that wants to reach out to you having listened to this podcast and go, I'm going to contact G direct and I'm going to have that conversation with her anyway. So how can people reach out to you?
Yeah, so I kind of, this wasn't a clever move, but I rebranded my Instagram. So originally it was reflective of the book title, but now you would find me g.d.poetryofficial. So that's how you can find me on Instagram. That's the best way to reach out to me. If anybody wants to go through, you know, talk about anything, if anybody wants to send me a message, or, you know, I'm there. So feel free to contact me, and it's managed by myself anyway. So I'm here.
Yeah, thanks, G. And just finally, you're doing some big things in the property world now as well. So you've got your company, and that's, you know, tell us a little bit about that before we wrap up, about your sort of aspiring company in property development and that.
So Otterly Solutions is a sourcing company. So by that, it's a term that I was aware of until I became, you know, got involved in the property industry. So what that means is I have private clients that I capture their property requirements, and they're looking for investment properties, and I'm their go-to lady. So I would look for a deal for them. I would do the due diligence, the initial due diligence, and say, this is a deal that matches your requirements. So I guess you'd call me the middle lady, really. I'm the one that does the negotiations on your behalf.
Like a broker.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. That's exactly what my brother said. Yeah.
But I mean, sometimes, you know, you need to lean on people like you, because if I started it tomorrow, I wouldn't have a clue. You know, so you need people that, you know, can steer you in the right direction, because, you know, you're talking a lot of money. You don't want to be making the wrong decisions, do you, when you're talking, you know, tens of thousands of pounds, if not more.
And where I get...
So you need people that know what they're doing.
And where I get to help people is people who don't have time. So if you are in your Monday to Friday, but then you say, oh, but I also want to invest, but you don't have the time, or you don't have the area knowledge that I would have on particular towns, that's where I think it becomes beneficial for like a hands-off investor. So I help hands-off investors. Yeah. And my past experience is project management. So I would then project management that project for them as well, and then just hand it over to a lettings team.
Spot on. Sounds brilliant. And is there a website for that people can get hold of if they are interested?
Yeah, there is indeed. It's Otterly, and I'll spell that because it's not one. It's not Otterly animal.
I couldn't even pronounce it.
So Otterly is spelt O T T I L I E, then the word solutions.com. But I think if you just type in G Denoa on LinkedIn, I believe I have got my website on there. Well, I should have.
It does. I checked today.
Oh, fantastic!
I reckon that company name is has got a French tone to it. Is that right?
It has indeed. If you were asking me what's my biggest aspiration in life at the moment, so I'm going to share it with you, Jim. And I'm going to
ask
myself,
you now, what's your biggest aspiration in life?
And you're going to hold me accountable on the 18th of February 2022 that my biggest thing that I would like to do is buy a chateau in France. And then I would like to invite families who can't afford holidays and do workshops with families. So I want to buy this, you know, I want to buy land, a property, something beautiful for them to come and experience holidays. But we're also doing, you know, building workshops with them at the same time where they're growing as a person, and it would be funded by me. So the only thing they'd have to worry about, so it would be they'd only have to worry about, say for example, their flights, and that's it. Food, accommodation, everything is sorted by me. It's an offering by me. And I especially wanted to do this during peak time, because the reason why families who can't afford holidays is because things are so expensive, and I want it to be affordable. I want it to be and my daughter's so into this, and you know, she's absolutely excited, and she normally says to me, "Mummy, when are we getting that chateau then?" And I'm like, best accountability buddy, a 7-year-old.
I love it. Well, I hope you're going to invite me as well, because I want to come and help you.
Oh, absolutely.
It sounds brilliant, so keep me posted.
Totally.
Thanks, G. G, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been absolutely brilliant. I can't believe how quickly the hour's gone. It's a little bit more now, but what a great interview. Thank you for being so honest. I really am mindful of just keep covering domestic abuse. This is probably about the third or fourth time we've covered it now on the podcast, but I'm just going to keep doing it because I think we need different angles. Mm-hmm. We need different people, different experiences. And hopefully then we'll get that message across, you know, and reinforce that message to people that they can come out of those toxic relationships and they can make a new life. And you're just a brilliant advocate and role model for that. So, you know, just keep doing what you're doing because you're doing some amazing stuff. And thank you.
Oh, thank you, Jim. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for coming on. And I'm glad we finally got it sorted. Thank you to all our listeners. We really do appreciate your support with this podcast. And we will catch you on the next episode. So bowled over by that interview with G Denoa. So open, so honest. And I'm just in awe of the amount of work that she's done to get her life back on track. She's an incredible example of how you can reach some real lows in life, but you can get back on track. You know, if you've got the grit and determination and the help and love of your family. Thank you so much for listening again to the Community Safety Podcast. We really appreciate it, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Alongside support from St Ives Chambers, RHE Global and Barden Co Recruitment, in partnership with District 4, you have been listening to the Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon.